golfers, get ready to elevate your Saturday mornings. Yeah, it's Brian Murphy here, and I am thrilled to introduce the Clubhouse Corner with Ben and Eddie. This is a passion project from the good folks at the Clubhouse in Fremont. These two are on a mission to make golf accessible and enjoyable for the masses. So set your alarm. 7 a.m. every Saturday, join Ben and Eddie at the Clubhouse Corner, only on KNBR.
Hey, we're back with you on tonight. Dieter Kurtenbach hanging out until 10 p.m. We're joined now by Kendra Andrews of ESPN, covering the Golden State Warriors. Always a great friend of the show. Kendra, how you doing? How you hanging in there? We're deep in the postseason. The wear and tear is there. How you doing?
I'm just telling you, Dieter, I just took a splendid four-hour nap, so I'm doing good. I'm doing good. When I nap, it's like it's a slumber. It's not a cat nap. I don't do those. It was amazing.
That's fantastic. I would love to make an easy transition to that's the way the Warriors played in Game 4, but I actually kind of liked their effort. I didn't mind how they came out in the game for sure, and yes, they let it get out of hand and then strangely came back in the fourth quarter with the kids and Damian Lee. To what do you attribute the Warriors game four loss?
Yeah, you know, I was actually speaking with someone with the Warriors earlier that day, and we kind of both shared the sentiment that we thought the outcome of game four was going to be more determined by how the Mavericks played than the Warriors. The Warriors, I agree with you, they did come out with good energy, especially compared to some of the other closeout, like first-time closeout opportunities they've had this postseason, Game 4 against Denver and then Game 5 against Memphis.
Just a little bit with Game 5 against Memphis.
A little bit. I mean, yeah, I guess when you put it like that, a lot better than that energy against
They were only down 29 points this time instead of 55.
Game 4 against the Mavs is one of those testaments of, like, when the Mavericks are hitting their shot, everything goes right for them. And when they don't hit their shot, everything kind of goes wrong for them.
Yeah.
So I do think it was more the case of the Mavericks getting everything that they really wanted. Do I think that then affected the Warriors and they kind of started to loosen up a little bit? And that's when the Mavs were really able to build up that lead. That third quarter from the Warriors was not a good one.
Right.
And usually that's their best time. So I think the Mavericks definitely did get to them, but it's through the way that they just established themselves early on. So that's kind of what I chalk it up to more, because also for the Mavs, kind of like Nikola Jokic said after the Nuggets won Game 4, they don't they don't feel that they deserve to be swept. And so I think it was ego is not the right word, but just like a mental, like
there's a pride
to
thing.
Win this game, because a pride. That's the word I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, a pride thing.
I think that's fair. I mean, Dallas has gotten a lot of really clean looks throughout this series, and maybe it's the moment, maybe it's the pressure, maybe it was just not their time, but they missed a lot of wide open shots. They were bound to have a game where a bunch of shots went in, but if we're talking about doing something historic, and coming back from 3-0 has never been done in NBA playoff history, you got to have more than our shots went in. And I didn't see any sort of tactical change or code breaking outside of overloading one side against the zone, which is something, you know, you did in sixth grade basketball. It's amazing it took that long for the Mavericks to figure it out. But I didn't see anything that changes the paradigm in this series. And then you add in the fourth quarter of that game where the kiddos had a good run. Like, is this strange to say that the Warriors are feeling good coming out of that game where they were getting their asses kicked?
No, I don't think so, because I think the Warriors kind of know what it is as well. Like, I just listed off those other two games, their first closeout opportunities, but let's just kind of take that Grizzlies game. So I guess against the Nuggets. We'll go against the Nuggets. After that game four, they were in really high spirits too, because I think, like you said, they just kind of know the situation at hand. They are playing extremely well in Chase Center this postseason. They have yet to lose a game there.
Yep.
The fact that their younger players were able to get it within 8 points is kind of ridiculous. It has to be a huge confidence builder for this team. And like you said, you know, the Mavs didn't change anything up so drastically that you have to say, okay, well, we need to now figure out the biggest counter moves to then, you know, fight back against them, just completely locking us up. I think the Warriors feel good and they feel confident about heading into game five. And, you know, as long as they come out with that same mindset of we cannot let this get back to Dallas, because I think once it goes back to Dallas, that's when you start to get a little hairy. That's the situation gets a little bit hairy. But in Chase Center, I think you should feel all right.
Obviously, the rotations are fairly out of whack. What's the status of Otto Porter? It sounded more precautionary than anything else that he was held out of game four. I'd imagine that precaution applies to game five as well.
No word yet on Otto status for game five, but one thing that he talked about, because he, you'll remember, Dieter, his right foot was sore. Mm-hmm. He was experiencing right foot soreness heading into game six against
Memphis.
The Grizzlies, and so they held him out for a little bit. And he even said, you know, it got, at first he kind of ignored it, and then it got to a point where it was really affecting him. And so they are trying to be really cautious with this left foot soreness so that it doesn't get to a point. Now, is it where it was with the right foot where he really can't put a lot of pressure? I'm not too clear on that. But it is something to watch out for, because he has been huge for this team this postseason.
What did you make of Jonathan Kuminga getting those minutes? Mm-hmm. It was... He certainly was not afraid to be on the floor, and a credit to a 19-year-old for not playing scared in that moment. But there were a lot of possessions in that second quarter where Jonathan Kuminga was ending the possession with a shot, and that's not the Warriors' offense in the way they want to do it. I suppose that even a better question than what did you think about Jonathan Kuminga, because we kind of know it was up and it was down. He was 19 years old. What are we making of Jordan Poole over the last two games? Because the ups and downs have been – fairly wild. He looks like a 22-year-old on the road in the Western Conference Finals, but the Warriors obviously need him to be more than that.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely struggled these past two games. I think that he's really haven't had a outstanding game, right, since that first Denver series. And the past two games in particular, he struggled. He looks really sped up to me, a little bit frantic. He's a guy who... he does have good handles. When he makes that first jab, he can be as quick as lightning, but sometimes it appears that he's moving a little too quickly for his own body to kind of catch up with him, and it's resulting in either maybe not great looks, maybe it's a turnover, maybe it's just kind of losing control and everyone needs to reset the offense. It's one of those things that they're going to let him play through it because, as you just said, they need him to, right? They're not going to pull him because once he gets going, he gets going. But it is one of those things that you have to kind of – he probably needs to remind himself, I am, you know, 23 years old. This is my first playoff. Let's just take a second, take a breath. But then you don't want him to overreact because in game two – he hit that dagger three-pointer, right? You want him to keep taking those kinds of shots because he can make them, but just throughout the night, making sure that you don't get ahead of yourself.
I mean, it's tough. It's tough. The Warriors are doing something that no one has ever done in the history of the NBA. They're playing two 19-year-olds at the same time in competitive minutes. And the guy who needs to sort of lead the way, yes, Klay Thompson, no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. But a 22-year-old on top of that is the guy who's bringing the ball up and down the floor. It's a heavy ask, and it's rather incredible that it one, didn't present itself until this moment, and two, that there were moments where it looked really good. I'm a bit flabbergasted by that fourth quarter. What clicked? Because obviously Dallas took their foot off the accelerator to a degree. That's understandable. But the Warriors did their part as well. What worked for that bench unit with Nemia Bjelica and Damian Lee?
I mean, it's a good question because it really, really everything clicked. I was sitting next to our friend Anthony Slater on press row, and both of us were kind of just looking at each other and looking at each other like, what is going on?
The Warriors bench was doing the same thing.
Oh, my God.
They're like, are we about to – should we put Stephen Clay back in?
I mean, I think – and clearly the Mavericks are thinking the same thing too.
Yeah.
I think with that unit, you know, there maybe it was also a mental – it's crazy how much, like, the mental – game comes into factor in these types of things. Kind of as I said, the Mavs head into this game saying, we got nothing to lose. The Warriors, you know, bench players, Nemanja Bjelica hasn't played, I think, like a second in this series so far.
Right.
You have nothing to lose when you're down 29. Let's just go out there. And, you know, these guys, we've seen it all season long, whenever these down-the-bench players get opportunities, they do still, it doesn't matter how far they're down, they put their heart and soul into it because a lot of these times. It has been such a long time since they've had rotational minutes. As far as just the X's and O's that's clicked, I haven't watched the game back yet, so I do need to see so I can have a better answer in terms of like basketball schematics. But yeah, I mean, it is impressive how Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody led that play.
Golfers, get ready to elevate your Saturday mornings. Yeah, it's Brian Murphy here, and I am thrilled to introduce the Clubhouse Corner with Ben and Eddie. This is a passion project from the good folks at the Clubhouse in Fremont. These two are on a mission to make golf accessible and enjoyable for the masses. So set your alarm. 7 a.m. every Saturday, join Ben and Eddie at the Clubhouse Corner. Only on KNBR.
The only other guy who's ever been this young and played minutes in the Western Conference Finals is Kobe Bryant. It's the only other guy who's played more than five minutes.
I did not know that.
So,
that's crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty bonkers. And, you know, Kobe at 19 was a very different Kobe, but he was also, you know, Kobe Bryant. forgive me. I mean, as much as we think about Jonathan Kuminga, like, I don't think Moses Moody really ascends to that level, though. He's been just wonderful. He's been really, like, I would bet he's kind of got a Kevon Looney aspect to him, Kendra. I can't believe I'm blaspheming here on tonight, but like, there's some Looney to him where it's just like, oh no, that guy's actually 37 years old and has been 37 years old his entire life.
And people say he has an old soul, right? Multiple people on this Warriors team say that Moses has an old soul, but he does. He is so like steady-handed, and even in the way he carries himself.
Yeah.
Before the game, after the game, just off the court, he is so calm and never gets too high, too low. He is one of those guys, and Steve Kerr said it earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. You know, he is going to be that Kevon Looney, that steady rock player that you're always going to be able to depend on, right? He's going to be able to check in and knock down the shots that you want him to make, that you need him to make, and it's going to, you know, he is 19, it's his first year, but projecting that he is able to do that, that's going to give him a concrete role and job in this league, because how this game has gone into the three-pointing like barrage, that everyone wants a guy like Moses Moody, and if you have him at 19, and then you can build him up to when he is, I guess, 26, like Kevon Looney, like it's crazy to think about.
We're you're very young, and yet I feel so very old when we talk about Moses Moody as just this incredible professional. If you're 19 years old and you're in the NBA, I expect you to have your shoes on the wrong feet. Like that is the kind of expectation I have. So for Moses Moody to just be out there, and there was a little bit of a struggle in the second quarter when he just decided, I'm not going to shoot the basketball, but it was great to see him bounce back and everybody just kind of chucking, playing loose, playing free, and they were playing good defense too. You can be as loose and free as you want on the offensive end if you're not turning the ball over. You can be as loose and free as you want on the defensive end if your rotations are sound. Though I guess they're not really doing very many rotations now. I am stunned at the amount of zone defense that the Golden State Warriors are playing. These guys are cowards. I mean, it's kind of a tough scene. But I understand why they're doing it. What have you made of the zone? And it's clearly Dallas doesn't love it.
I mean, well, did you see Jason Kidd's comments last night? I mean, Jason Kidd last night after the game said they're playing zone because they can't play us one-on-one.
I think it's maybe one guy that they can't play one-on-one. I'm pretty sure they can keep Dorian Finney-Smith in front of them.
I think that's a fair – it's a fair I got my brain.
They're not concerned about Dwight Powell. It's more that Luka guy who's really good.
I think so. Yeah, they don't have a one guy answer for Luka. Of course, you know, you got to tip your hat to Andrew Wiggins, especially in that first game. He was absolutely incredible on him. And you know, if you can't play one-on-one defense against a guy like Luka, it is kind of like that balance of like, okay, if you can't play one-on-one defense against Luka, do you just go zone to kind of temper just him, right?
Yes.
Or you go one-on-one and say, you let Luka cook, but we're going to shut down. Yeah, Dwight Powell, mm-hmm. Finney Smith, we're going to stick on him. And the Warriors seemingly have chosen that, and it does become an issue when you have nights like last night where Luka's cooking, but then every other role player on that team is also hitting their shots. If you actually do shut down everyone else and you say, okay, Luka has to beat us by scoring a billion points, but no one else can hit anything, like in game three, it was
Bullock went 0 for 10.
Yeah, Bullock went 0 for 10. Right. If you're having that moment, okay, well, maybe you're on to something. But if you're in zone and everyone's hitting their stuff, then it might be time to try something new.
It'll be really interesting to see, because the overload created, much as it took too long for the Warriors to, or for the Mavericks to go to an overload against zone, took too long for the Warriors to adjust to that, and I thought they did a good job. And you mentioned Anthony Slater earlier; he had a wonderful breakdown of on the Athletic about it. It'll be interesting to see if Dallas has another wrinkle and how quickly the Warriors can adapt to that, or if it's just one of those games from the Golden State Warriors. There is something about the championship pedigree of this team that does come out when the going gets like down to brass tacks. And tomorrow's a brass tacks game, right?
It is. And I think we've seen time and time again against this playoff, all three of the Warriors' opponents don't have much recent, especially playoff runs or championship wins. And so, yes, I completely agree with you. When it comes down to it, the Warriors know how to lock in and take care of business. At least there's three cornerstone players doing it. It's about making sure that all those guys that Jordan Poole, as we're talking about, knows that Jonathan Kuminga, if he sees minutes again, knows that Moses Moody knows. But you better believe that Draymond Green, Stephen Curry, and Klay Thompson and Andre Iguodala from the bench are walking into Chase Center tomorrow, telling them, like they said, after Memphis, like, we are not going back there. We have to close it out here.
Yeah, no, it'll be really interesting, too, because Draymond has been so up and down in this series, and same can be said for Clay, and they're putting a tremendous amount of stress on Mr. Stephen Curry. Now, his superpower has always been his endurance, not necessarily even his three-point shot. And that's actually been a very interesting tactical thing. When the Warriors had Kevin Durant around, well, you could shoot all the twos you want. He's Kevin Durant. They're shooting a ton of two-pointers in this entire postseason. And it feels kind of like an old man's game, but twos count too. And I've been really impressed with that, using all three spots on the floor, whereas Dallas is not interested in such a concept. That feels like a big differentiating factor for the Warriors against all three of the teams they've played.
100%. I mean, watching this Dallas series, the Mavericks are kind of the team that people labeled the Warriors as. And maybe a few years ago, the Warriors were just taking that many threes, right? But, like, they have taken it to a whole other level. And it was actually really interesting to see this team that kind of, the Warriors, that have built Stephen Curry, who's built like this, what the three-point shot is today in the NBA, adjust their game and not just live and die by the three. And I think through experience, they kind of know that as we've seen with the Mavericks, it can work great when it's working, but when it's not working, you have to adjust it. And for players like Clay, who have been really up and down so far, he's still taking a buttload of threes, but you are seeing them really clog the paint. You're seeing them drive to the rim, and they have so many guys who are so good at finishing at the rim. I want to see Jordan Poole starting to drive to the rim more, because he is so good at that. Andrew Wiggins can attack. Or Jonathan Kuminga, I think that's something that, like, the Dallas team doesn't have a rim protector, right?
Not even close.
Keep on driving to the hole. Actually, just that sparked a thought that I had to share with you of all people, but someone in Dallas in game three, I did hear a fan yell out, we need to get a big, we need a Kevon Looney. And I thought that was a very,
my heart is full. My heart is going to overrun. I was saying, just run the entire offense through Looney. If you need a bunch of twos, just give it to Looney.
Right. Because no one's going to stop them there. And so it's been really good to see kind of how the Warriors have adjusted that game and notice that they can attack that and do something instead of just live and die by the three-pointer.
It's exceptional analysis there, Kendra. Thank you so much for sharing it. Enjoy a 14-hour sleep tonight. I'll see you at Chase Center tomorrow. Always a pleasure. Again, thanks again. And if you haven't been checking out Kendra's stuff with ESPN, What do you, like, not have cable or something? Do you not have the internet? Like, get yourself and rectify that situation right now. Kendra, always a pleasure. Talk soon.
Talk to you soon.
Ah, the great Kendra Andrews, ladies and gentlemen. Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. What a gem. Very lucky. Very lucky to have Kendra Andrews around. Talk some dubs. Because she understands the value of Kevon Looney. And a lot of other players. But mostly Kevon Looney. We understand the value of advertisements. This is the game that we play. Kurtenbach with you until 10.
Hey, it's Brian Murphy here, and whether you're orchestrating a corporate gathering, gearing up for a team-building session, or just seeking a spot to savor thrilling sports and activities, the Clubhouse in Fremont is the go-to destination for bistro, bar, bocce, golf, and fitness. From team-building to private golf lessons on any one of 140 golf courses around the world, the Clubhouse in Fremont has you covered. Visit FremontClubhouse.com to learn more about their amazing amenities and private events. The Clubhouse in Fremont, the Bay Area's place to play.